Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome to today's Powered by Transova podcast. We're very excited to introduce, and she needs no introduction actually, is Diane Brook. She's been with the company for 40 years, so she's been with the company since the very beginning. We discuss in this episode, Emily, that I'm not sure there's anybody more knowledgeable on the team or that's been a bigger part of the success we've had at Transova.
Yeah, definitely. Diane is one of a kind and has spearheaded the success of our cloning and genetic preservation department, not only just within cattle, but also sheep, goats, and pigs. And she has really kind of taken that department and ran with it. And is just a huge part of our industry. And she really digs into the nitty gritty of that whole process and its benefits.
Yeah. And the other big thing that she covers in this episode that I think is particularly interesting or worthwhile is the myths. You know, there's so many of those, you know, myths that float around about cloning and genetic preservation. And she does a great job answering some of those and kind of debunking them, so to speak.
Yeah, hopefully that section of this podcast will answer some questions for people that have heard some rumors or, you know, been on the fence about cloning, and will clear the air and hopefully get them to take the plunge into something that they've been thinking about forever.
Definitely. It might be one of those episodes you have to re-listen to because there's so many things to take away from it. So I think we should just go ahead and get into it so people can hear for themselves some of the valuable information that Diane shares. So without further ado, here is Diane Brook.
Thank you, Diane, for joining us today. It's great to have you on the podcast. Why don't you start off and introduce yourself to our listeners and talk about your role here at Transova.
Well, thank you, ladies. I am super glad to be joining you today, and I'm very excited for this new podcast. I think it'll have a lot of meaningful information for your listeners, and I'm looking forward to learning some new things myself. This year, along with a pandemic and many other exciting things, marked my 40th year here at Transova. In the beginning, I was not a likely candidate for a job at Transova, and hopefully this will give some insight into the open-mindedness of this company for those young people that are thinking about entering into a career in reproductive technology. Since I was a town kid by birth, but through the magic of being at the right place at the right time and being surrounded by the right people, I was able to join the team of Transova. Dr. David Faber and Dr. Daryl Funk were in a veterinary practice in Sioux Center, which I joined after graduation from college for what I thought would be a short period of time on my way to vet school. But shortly after I arrived, Dr. Faber asked me if I wanted to join himself and Dr. Funk in embarking on a trial run of a technology that he had learned in vet school called embryo transfer. And so with little thought to how it would affect me for the next 40 years, I said, sure, sounds like fun. And with that, I pretty much determined the pathway that I would take for the next 40 years. And I want to thank Dr. Faber and Dr. Funk for giving me that chance, because I was definitely the definition of a green kid at that time. But what am I saying? They were green kids too. So we were all green, and we had no idea how big it would become and how much influence it would have on the reproductive technology that occurs in the U.S. and really around the world. But that was with unauspicious beginnings and a humble start. That's what we did. We began doing embryo transfer work on nights and weekends. And pretty soon, I believe it was April of 1981, we had our first client, a gentleman named Lars Ludvigsen from Cushing, Iowa. And I'm happy to say that after 40 years, Dr. Faber's still here. I'm still here. Dr. Funk has retired. But we also still work for the same client that we began with. So that's pretty much sums up what happened in the first 40 years. I think your actual question was, what is my role? After spending time in both embryology and sales areas, today I serve as the Advanced Technology Sales and Production Manager. And that's really just a fancy title for the person who coordinates the cloning department. And so today, although I work across many teams with our embryology team, with our professional veterinarians, with the cloning lab, with the GE department, today, it's a multifaceted team that specifically focuses on livestock cloning and gene editing efforts that are replicated using cloning technology.
Diane, you've been here since the very beginning, as you just described. And I mean, I think you've seen it all, been through it all, you know, since those kind of humble beginnings, as you so described. But tell me, how has Transova changed over the course of those 40 years that you've been involved?
So 40 years ago, we had what Dr. Faber calls, we were BC. And really what that meant was before cows, before clients, before capital, before cars, we had nothing. And so what we did was once we were able to get the semantics of the embryo transfer practice down pat, well, we began offering our services. In the meantime, we all had day jobs. So this was a little bit, you know, on the side, but it grew rapidly. And we would go out in a van, not a van down by the river, just a brown van, that we would go and do the work on farm. And so the client had to give the donor the FSH injections and synchronize the recipients. At that time, although we did a non-surgical flush, so to speak, all the transfers were surgical. And so that did involve quite a bit of effort to coordinate getting recipients prepped for surgery, doing the surgery, and then an excellent surgeon to sew them back up. And we did that for many years, and the conception rates were exceptional. We also were very fortunate that we started in the days of the big flowered up Simmentals, and those were embryo making machines. They would produce embryos. I think our first flush, where we were actually paid for our efforts, was well over 20. And we were like, what? You know, it was amazing how many embryos those cows could produce. So that, with humble beginnings, that's how we started. And a few years later, we're able to have a stationary facility with a little lab in it. And as the years progressed, we added different services like IVF, sex semen, cloning, genetic modification. And then later on, we even added divisions like Progenitus, which is our dairy and beef production model where you can actually purchase embryos. And so a lot of it was not at all on the radar when we started, but we were fortunate to be early adapters of innovative technology. We had a brilliant leader in Dr. Faber, who had the ability to understand what was going to work and what people would need, even when it may have been in against all obstacles to do so, as in the case of IVF. And so sometimes from rocky starts, if you just have perseverance and stick with it, you are able to get to a place where you offer an incredible tool to your clients and for their cows, for the ability to propagate these rock star cows that previously you could only get one calf a year out of. Today, we have over 300 people, 15 sites, 50 affiliated locations. Please correct me if I'm wrong on that, girls. But it's amazing how much it's grown. I would have never foreseen this at the beginning, but we're very, very proud of what's happened and the influence Transova has had in the U.S. and on the world. I think in addition to what has changed over the years, I'd probably also call out what hasn't changed over the years. And early on, we made a little mantra called Eggs, Pregs, Recips, and Service when we talked about what do our clients want. And today, that's actually still true. But the dedication to the multiply success of our clients is still paramount in everything we do. And I think that is the differentiator and the reason that Transova has been around as long as it has, is that every day when we get up and we come to work, our job is to make happy cows and happy clients. And we still believe that and are passionate about it. And everybody on the team is in for the long haul to make that happen.
I'm just picturing Diane and Dave in the first couple staff meetings 40 years ago in a van down by the river.
Yeah.
No, but you're right, Diane. I mean, I've been with Transova 7 years and I've heard the eggs, pregs, and recips multiple times since starting. And I think that's pretty true that we've kept those same values from, you know, 40 years ago, and it's kind of driven our business forward. So Diane, you know, listening to you talk about all of the changes and not changes over the last 40 years, it sounds like you guys, the founders of Transova, put in a lot of hard sweat and tears into the company. What does it mean to you that we are celebrating 40 years?
It's honestly really hard to comprehend. It does not feel like 40 years. You know, when you talk about success, success is no accident. The road to success is paved with hard work, perseverance, learning, studying, sacrificing, and most of all, loving what you do. And I think that I can honestly say that at Transova, we are really, truly blessed to have a great team that offers great technology, but most of all is passionate about what they do and is passionate about helping our clients and fulfilling their needs. I see it every day. I see it in the new people that come on board. I see it in the long-termers like me who still love to get up every morning and come to work because they know there will be something new and exciting coming down the pike. And most of all, we know that we are part of a bigger effort to feed the world, which is a very altruistic effort. And by helping propagate the very best genetics in the world, those that provide the most meat and milk for future generations, we feel a real sense of pride in being able to assist our clients in maximizing the production potential of the cows that they own. And I shouldn't just say cows, because we also work with pigs, sheep, and goats as well in the cloning area. So that's probably the best way I can answer that.
Diane, you talked about how, you know, with our cloning services, we've evolved to now serve more than just beef and dairy clients, and it's, you know, small ruminants and pigs, goats. Tell me, let's get into the nitty gritty of what your specialty is, which is cloning and genetic preservation. Tell us what is cloning? Can you kind of give us a Cliff Notes version?
I can. Cloning is a little bit of a mysterious science, and it has a very fancy scientific name, somatic cell nuclear transfer, or SCNT for short. But really, it's simply the process through which we produce an identical twin to your rock star animal. It's just born at a later place in time. And so if you think of it that way, the concept is actually quite easy to comprehend.
So Diane, maybe we can go into the different stages of that cloning process, because sometimes you run promotions, you know, for just the genetic preservation or the cell line. Maybe you can tell us the differences in that. So when they see the next promotion coming up, they kind of, you know what that means and what the benefits of that are.
Certainly. So the first step in the cloning process is really to get a preservation done. A genetic preservation, commonly called a cell line, is the culmination of taking a simple tissue sample from your rock star and culturing that tissue into a cell line that takes about 2 weeks and may contain 3 to 10 million cells. These cells will be used in the cloning process if you choose to move forward with that option. The cost for that is about $1,600. So it's a relatively inexpensive insurance policy to preserve the DNA on your very best. We also have a little more economic option where we take that actual tissue sample and we freeze it intact. We call that an express tissue bank. It's a $500 option, so very affordable, and used if you are really not sure you're going to move forward with cloning on that animal, but you recognize that there is potential there, and you want to make sure that the DNA is preserved for future use. Ultimately, if you do decide to clone, you're going to go ahead and culture that embryo or ETB express tissue bank into a cell line. But it's an option that a lot of people will use in a large scale preservation effort. For example, a bull stud may use it as insurance. A swine farm may use it as a preventative insurance in the event of African swine fever. Someone may use it before they have a sale on a young animal that they don't know is going to develop to something great, but they anticipate that it could. There's lots of different reasons why you use an express tissue bank, but the majority of our work in preservation is a genetic preservation, and we offer that for all livestock species, cattle, pigs, sheep, and goats.
Yeah. And what is the shelf life for some of those, you know, the cell or tissue banks and things?
Oh yeah, good question, Emily. It's really indefinite. As long as they are stored in the appropriate liquid nitrogen storage at the appropriate temperatures, they should last indefinitely. And there's enough cells there that you can clone repeatedly from them, and we can grow more cells from the cells we have. So it's basically a perpetual supply. You should not run out if the cell line was taken appropriately in the first place. And I'll just touch on that a little bit more. We take a lot of samples on living animals, but there is many an occasion where we are called about a deceased animal. And we are actually able to get tissue samples in and grow a cell line from tissue out of a deceased animal for up to several days after the death event. Most people don't realize that we have that option. It's one of the only ways that you can capitalize on an unexpected death situation and still preserve the DNA to make additional heifers or bulls that you can use to propagate that particular genotype in the future. And so we do provide options for that. If you find yourself in that event, you can look on our website and you'll find deceased animal instructions. That would be in the event of an unexpected death of one of your rock stars. But otherwise, we generally have you call in and we'll fill out an order form and we'll send you a kit that's appropriate for you to take the tissue samples from your animal, living animal, and return them to us where our lab will culture them into the appropriate genetic preservation or express tissue bank, whichever option you have selected. And then following that time period for completion, they do go into long-term storage in liquid nitrogen vats. And those vats are monitored all the time, of course, for to make sure that your cell lines are safe and taken care of properly. In addition to the actual fee for the service up front, we do charge a yearly storage fee after a year of storage. At any time down the road, if you decide you don't want to use that cell line or that genetic preservation or express tissue bank, you can elect to discard it and then the storage stops.
Diane, you've done a great job of explaining the possibilities of taking those tissue samples while the animal is still alive, but also deceased animals as well, which I think is a huge benefit. You know, that it's always unexpected and it's always that special one too. And so we get a lot of those phone calls like, hey, my favorite, you know, donor cow is out back and she's not doing very well. And so I think you've done a really great job of explaining that there's still an opportunity for producers to clone that particular animal. Can you tell me a little bit more too, what other, you know, what animals can you clone or what can we clone at Transova?
Well, many mammals have been cloned after Dolly the sheep was produced in 1996. Today, we focus on the livestock species that are compatible with our mission, and that would be cattle, pigs, sheep, and goats.
Can you tell me why producers would even pursue the cloning option? We always had embryo transfer and in vitro fertilization. What are the added benefits to producing a clone from that rock star, as you describe?
Absolutely. There are actually many benefits to cloning your rock star animal. I'm going to touch on four of them because they're the most common. Through the cloning process, progressive producers can duplicate the animals that contribute the most value to their herds and those that forward their goals to produce more efficient, healthier animals and better quality food products. The influence of these animals through breeding can help create a more consistent supply of tender flavorful beef, for example. For example, if you had a prime carcass, you could clone from a prime carcass. Another example of a cloning application is in the case of an animal lost early in its breeding career due to death or injury, perhaps even before the value of its genetics were fully discovered or harvested. That's a very common use of the technology. They just weren't old enough to produce embryos or semen, and you got no benefit from their genotype on your herd. But through the technology of cloning, you are able to produce an identical twin born at a later place in time and revisit that genotype's influence on your herd or the breed in general. Cloning technology can also help extend an elite animal's genetic influence to contribute to the improvement of food animal production by increasing embryo or semen production through cloned animals. So, for example, if you have a rock star that's in high demand, you could produce 5 identical twins and have 5 times as many embryos being produced, all to different bulls. So you can sample different bulls more frequently. In the case of a bull or a boar or a buck, you can produce more semen to meet extraordinary demand. a lot of times there are bulls that simply can't produce enough semen to meet the demand that's out there. If you have five cloned bulls, you can. And a lot of times in that situation, they may even pool the semen on all the clones. So they take the advantage of if you have one bull or boar that is doing better on that particular day or the semen is of better quality, you reap the benefits of a pooled sample. The other unique opportunity for clients with cloning technology is the production of superior castrated males. Steers, geldings, barrows, wethers, they, of course, can be very elite, particularly in the show ring, but you would have the ability to produce an intact cloned male for breeding purposes. And this occurs quite frequently, especially when you have a real outlier that's won a major show that's very, very difficult. The reason for that is that anything that occurs after the birth event is basically a do-over in a clone. And so if you had a castration that occurred after the birth event, if they broke a leg, if they had a C-section, if they acquired a disease, all a do-over with the cloned animal, provided that the right circumstances are available. For example, if you had a cow that acquired Yoni's disease in her lifetime, of course, you would want to put the cloned embryos into recipients that were tested negative for Yoni's disease or BLV or something of that nature. Did I answer your question, Sarah?
It did. And there's a lot of information in what you answered. It's just a lot for people to sort through that. All these things that you can do with cloning, it's not just making a replica. It's all the added opportunities that come with it. So thank you for describing that.
Yeah, definitely. And I have a question, Diane, that wasn't on our list. So if you don't want to include this, you can say so. But I feel like when we are at shows, a lot of the times we get questions about bulls that are clones not performing well as the originals, semen-wise, or producers say, well, I'm not going to buy the clone semen because the original is better. Is there any truth in that, Diane, or is that just something in the rumor mill?
I am happy to answer your question, Emily. And in fact, we will entitle this segment Mythbusters, because there are a lot of myths and questions like that I hear on a daily basis and have for many, many years. That I would be happy to rectify. Let me handle your question first, which was about semen from cloned bulls. The fact is that a clone is a genetic twin and a genetic match to the animal that was the genetic donor, the animal that provided the sample from which we produced a cell line or genetic preservation. On paper, well, we can line the alleles and genes up and they will be a match. So when you are breeding to a cloned bull, it is like you are breeding to the original bull. You have the same blueprint. Now, every single time you breed bull A to cow B, what cloned or not, you have a million possible genetic possibilities. And so you can breed those two animals together every single year of her life and have a different calf. They'll be different sexes. They'll look different. They are not going to be the same because there's so many genetic combinations. And that holds true when you breed cloned bull A to cow B, the same number of genetic combinations are exact. But when they say that the calves are lesser out of cloned bull A or cloned bull B, that's not a factual statement because the genetics are exactly the same. You still have the same number of genetic possibilities. So you may have a calf that's not as good, as the calf you had originally, or you may have one that's better. And so every single time you have to remember, it's like you are breeding to the original bull, but you have a million possible genetic combinations. The second myth I will address is that clones are born at the same age that their a genetic donor was at the time of the sample. Again, I'll tell a story that probably explains this one best. When going way back to 1996 is the origin of this myth. When Dolly the sheep was produced, she died at about 8 years of age from a respiratory infection that killed a lot of the other sheep in that barn. And when they examined her, they looked at the telomeres on her chromosomes, which they felt were shorter than what they should have been. The telomeres on our chromosomes get shorter as we age. And so they hypothesized that maybe clones are born prematurely old. They did numerous subsequent studies, some of which we were involved in, and in fact produced more Dolly the sheep's from the sheep from her particular cell line and let them get as old as they could. And I'm not even sure how old those sheep got, maybe 20, but an unheard of age for sheep. And it just came to be that the telomeres can occasionally be shorter on specific animals. They probably aren't people too. It doesn't pass on to their offspring. And I don't think it necessarily means they're going to have a shorter lifespan either. But basically what we're doing is taking the cells back to infancy or totipotency. In order for us to clone, we have to reprogram them. And that's what we do. And so we start the time clock over again. And you should expect that a clone will live a normal lifespan. Now, that being said, that does not mean they are immortal. They will die from the same things that the other animals in your herd will die from. Lightning strike, bloat, disease, broken legs. And so those are probably the biggest two myths that I deal with on a daily basis. The other third one, a little bit lesser, is when people call in and want to order clones on their rockstar donor cow, and they would like 4 bulls and 4 females. I'm always sorry to tell them that I can't make them any bulls. I can only produce what you have. So if you bring a female to us for preservation services and cloning, we will make females. If you bring a bull, we'll make bulls, but we can't do both. And the other one that isn't really an urban myth, but it is a detail that I do point out, is about color patterns. We will have animals that are spotted or belted. And people ask, will those spots or markings be exactly the same? The likelihood is that they will not. And you will find this phenomenon in identical twins, split embryos, and clones, where you have, even though they're genetic twins, the migration of the melanoblasts that cause coat color migrate differently. And so the coat color isn't going to change, but where it's placed may change. So if you have socks on an animal, they may be of varying heights. If you have spots, they may be a different, a little bit different spot pattern. On a belted pig, especially a cross that is hamp looking, you will have various widths of belts. They will not all be the same. Some will be partial belts, some will be full belts. Especially hamps will see that in. They won't change from black and white to a different color. The color will stay the same. Placement of it can be different because of that migration of the melanoblasts. And they will still be a genetic match on paper.
That was awesome information, Diane. I feel like that section right there is going to answer so many questions for people because, like you said, they are very commonly asked of us at shows and when we're out and about talking to people. So thank you for bringing that up. I think that's going to be super helpful to people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're just going to refer to this episode when these questions come up because you covered about all of the ones that we get or a lot of the misconceptions.
Yeah, good question, Emily.
Yeah. Well, I know when I was giving a tour once, and granted, this was to some sixth graders, I think, and I said, oh, it's just a genetic twin born later, and they thought that it would have been like a copy of them at that age right now. I was like, no. It's a baby. It's not like you're going to have your doppelganger walking around doing evil stuff or anything, which is what my mom says, who she won't listen to this, but she watches too many movies and thinks that it's Attack of the Clones or something.
Yeah. So. There, you know, I was just thinking about something else. When you do clone a castrated male and you make an intact male, they will look somewhat different. And why is that, girls? What is now being produced that wasn't being produced in the castrated male? Starts with a T.
It's the testosterone.
Testosterone. Yep. Okay. Yep. And so you are used to looking at an animal that did not have the production of testosterone for a big part of its life. And they look different than an animal of the same genotype that has the influence of testosterone. Bulls look different than steers. And so that is the biggest thing I have to remind people when they do make that switch. They'll say, he looks kind of a little bit different than the steer did. Well, I hope so, because he is now under the influence of testosterone. So that is something to remember when you make that switch. It's probably the biggest crapshoot of all the things we do. And I remind people of that frequently, but we do a lot of it. It's a way to, you know, how many people do you know have said, God, I wish I had that guy back as a, you know, if it was a weather, I wish I had him as a buck, or I wish I'd left him intact. And now you can fulfill that wish, but they will look different. Does it happen all the time very successfully? Yes. There's a lot of bulls out there that are clones from a steer. Now, the thing that you do need to remember when you're doing that is, was that going to be a viable semen producing animal? You don't know, because they were castrated before they got to that point. So there always is a possibility that you may be cloning an animal that's not going to produce viable semen. It doesn't happen very often, but it certainly can.
A lot of it is environment too, right, Diane? When you get that clone, were you going to ask that, Sarah?
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because I've heard Diane say it in such a really understandable way, because, you know, we talk about showing clones and Diane's talking about how much they look alike or don't look alike. And so I was going to have her go into that exact thing, Emily, which is, you know, the environment versus the genetic portion of it and how and yes. Why some of those changes occur too.
Yeah. Good question, girls. I'm glad you brought it up. So an adult animal is G by E, genetics times environment. We can mimic or replicate the genetics that you provide us with. None of us can replicate the environment that animal was raised in, because you certainly can't remember everything that happened, and you may have purchased it. And I mean, there's just no way to identically mimic the environment that a rock star grew up in. And we all know that these true champions, these very elite animals, tend to never have missed a day. All the stars lined up for them. Okay. And so I will tell people when they ask me, you know, let's just use this is a hypothetical, for instance, if you won the National Western show and you would like to win it again, because that was awfully fun. Can we produce a cloned animal from that genetic donor that you have that will guarantee that you will win that show again? And my answer was always no, but I can tell you what we can do. When you're cloning a super elite individual like that, these are my numbers. This is Diane's percentages. No, but this is not written anywhere. I feel like 25% of that is genetics. That's where we come in. We can make you a genetic match. We've got that part covered. And then about 50% is animal husbandry. How did you feed them? How did you prepare their hair? Did you have a cooler? You know, what did you do to make sure that they were on time to be 12 o'clock on that day that you were going to show at the National Western? That's your animal husbandry. That's environment, but you can control that somewhat. So now we're up to 75%. The last 25% is what I call dumb luck. Did you get the right judge? Was it political? Did the animal step on a stone on the way to the trailer? You know, did something happen that skewed you off your path to the big win? And we all know those things happen all the time. And so can you produce a champion from a champion? Yes. Has it happened? Yes. Will it happen all the time? I think the truthful answer is no. We can provide you with the tools that I just explained, but there is an element of that environmental part that some of it you have control over, some of it you have no control over. Is that the one you were thinking about, Sarah?
It is. And I like that last component of that, because there's so many pieces that have to fall into place. You know, what class you're in and what, like you said, what judge you have. There's so much that still factors into that. Even if you do have that exact animal, you know, that one previously, and you've tried to do everything consistently, it's, everybody knows that shows cattle that it's never a guarantee.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there is one other question you haven't asked me that I would like you to ask me is, and I'll just ask it and answer it. How do cloned animals perform reproductively? And I'm specifically going to address females because that's what I've studied the most. But that's a question I get asked a lot. And we did a longitudinal study which evaluated the results of embryo transfer and IVF on cloned females that came back into the Transova system. And this was a study that encompassed over 8 years and 9,000 embryos. So a pretty big study. And we produced a paper that was in the Scientific Journal Plus One. So it's a peer-reviewed paper. Anyway, the short version of a really long paper is that cloned animals produce the same as their non-cloned peers and their genetic donors. So what does that mean? If you have a donor that produces really well, it is likely that the clones will produce embryos really, really well. If you have a donor has a lot of issues, it is likely the clone could have those as well. If the genetic donor carries a genetic recessive, will the clone have it? Absolutely. She's a clone. If we have five clone sisters, will they all perform exactly the same every time? Probably not. You're still going to see a bell-shaped curve where you have three that perform the same as, one that performs better than, and one that performs not as well as. But all in all, when you look at all the data over a long period of time, the number of embryos produced by cloned females in our program was the same as those that were not cloned. And so I think that's important for breeders to understand and have some faith in reproductive performance of their animals in the future.
Yeah, I think that's great information for our listeners to have that may be thinking about cloning a donor or even a bull, you know, or a sheep or goat or pig down the line. I think those are all important things that they need to know. So switching gears here a little bit, Diane, you know, you travel a lot to promote the cloning aspect of our business. What is your favorite show to go to and, you know, mingle with clients at?
Well, first of all, I love going to shows. I love going to clients' farms and ranches and seeing what their hard work and perseverance has produced. I love hearing about their philosophies. And but mostly I like seeing the fruits of our labors. I like to see embryo transfer and IVF calves and cloned cattle come back in and show and sell very well, and the influence that they have upon a breed or the breeder's program. So what does success in my role look like? I can honestly say that I love what I do today as much as I did 40 years ago. I cannot wait to get up in the morning to see what new technology will come across my path. And I cannot wait to go to these shows to see what new innovative things are there and the new animals that are available. And I think I see that best at three shows. So I'm going to not answer with one. I'm going to answer with three. The National Western Stock Show, World Dairy Expo for the dairy sector, and the Houston Livestock Show for the Boss Indica sector. I also enjoy all the Texas majors for their incredible combination of cattle, pigs, sheep, and goats. I can hit them all at the end. And of course, they're all very, very competitive. My favorite state fair, I would be remiss if I didn't say it was the Iowa State Fair. Hands down.
I think, too, the important thing to know also is that usually if there's a Transova rep at any of these larger shows, that we will have a cell line kit with us, that if anybody decides that they want to get a tissue sample, that will be somebody's usually available to get one for them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That show dependent, Diane, are there some shows that are more stringent on that versus others?
There are some shows that prefer that you take a sample before you get to the show. Once you are in the show area and enrolled, they do not allow you to take any samples. And that's just because they're trying to keep things sequestered, guarded, and they're certainly trying to prevent media scrutiny that would be unfavorable. And so I understand that, but it does remind you that you need, if you have a good one, you need to be taking a sample up front ahead of time before you get there. I know that people think they're going to jinx their results if they do that. That's a little superstitious. Stop it. Just get the sample in the tank. And then if you want to do an express tissue bank, which isn't that costly, at least you have the DNA preserved and you can go and relax and have a good show as much as you can in that high pressure environment.
Yeah, I would say a lot of the messages or phone calls that I receive, even on my end, and I'm sure you get a lot more, start with, I didn't want to take it before because I was worried I would jinx us. But then they're kind of scrambling last minute. So
all the time.
I guess there's two sides to that. But Diane, is there anything else we haven't asked you or any other misconceptions? I think that's been a great part of this episode, is all the myth busting that you've done. Is there anything else you'd want to cover during this?
No, I just want to thank Transova and you ladies for allowing the opportunity to talk about what we do here. I'm really blessed, I think, to work for one of the best reproductive companies in the world. I get to rub shoulders with the most talented teammates on the planet. I get to provide money-making solutions for industry-leading clients. and I get to make the most irreplaceable animals in the world replaceable. You know, they've asked me for a motto at times, and this is one we did use a few years back. We can make once in a lifetime, twice in a lifetime, maybe more. And really, guys, does it get any better than that? Not for me, it doesn't. So thank you for taking the time to ask for my opinions and theories on the technologies that we offer, and to also get an opportunity to thank Transova for allowing me to live this blessed life and work with all the great producers and the great livestock animals out there. It's really amazing. I'm truly blessed.
Well, I would say a big thank needs to go back at you, Diane, because you've been a part of this company for 40 years. And I would say there's probably nobody more knowledgeable than yourself amongst our team. And so I know we often go back, Diane, when we've got questions, and it's not just cloning and genetic preservation. It's top to bottom embryo transfer, you know, troubleshooting questions. And so I want to thank you for everything that you've done. I know it couldn't be possible without you. So thank you, Diane.
You're welcome. Yes. Thank you, Sarah and Emily.
Transova would look a heck of a lot different if we didn't have Diane, that's for sure. So, well,
I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Diane, for joining us once again. I think this has been an awesome episode, and I'm excited to get some feedback and from our clients, and hopefully it was helpful to some people. So thank you again, and we're definitely going to have you on for another episode, and we'll dig in more to maybe some sheep and pig stuff.
Sounds great. Thank you much.
Thank you, Diane.
Or maybe an episode where we can tell Lindsay stories.
Okay. I can better show Lindsay pictures.
Ooh, no, but let's not do that. Let's not do that.
I'm sure there's some Sarah pictures in there too.
Sarah and Lindsay pictures.
Shouldn't have opened that can of worms.
The early days. All right. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.